Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bob Thune from Corndale Church. I'm here with my friend, Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Dusty White, once again,
still
not
without
here.
Dusty.
And this guy has been gone for weeks. So here, I promise you all, Dusty will be back in one or two episodes from now. I'm told. He feels badly.
Maybe.
He feels badly for being gone for so many in a row. But Chris and I are here. And it's the last week of August, and we have some fun stuff to talk about. We are recording this a few days early. Chris is getting ready to leave for Nepal.
Yeah.
So by the time you hear this, he will be on the other side of the world. And I had a new book come out yesterday.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So two interesting, unusual things are happening in one week. Hey, by the way, want to give a shout out to Josh Garrels for our intro and outro music. Years ago, Josh gave us permission to use his music for our podcast, and so we always want to commend him. Also want to thank Zach Lee, who's the guy behind the scenes that edits and chops things up and puts in the intros and outros and gets these podcasts ready to upload.
We sound like 50% smarter because of his edits.
Exactly. He cuts out all the times where we're like, just makes us sound really intelligent. And today, we have snacks, two different snacks provided by two different listeners. Eric brought us monster cookies, of which I confess, Chris, that I ate one like an hour ago before this podcast.
Yeah, it's usually, super tasty.
Usually I try to withhold all snacks until we podcast, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to eat one of
these.
Just
could not wait.
We also have puppy chow given to us by an anonymous listener who I don't think intended to be anonymous, but they dropped it off when I wasn't here. And our staff was like, hey, this woman brought this puppy chow for the Wednesday conversation, and I can't remember who it was. And so the good news is the Lord sees. The Lord knows your labors for his kingdom and your blessing of us here on the Wednesday Conversation podcast. So nameless listener, whoever you are, we are enjoying at this moment your puppy chow, and we thank you. Before we turned on these microphones here, Chris, I was like, Chris, what's going on this week? And he was like, I'm getting ready to go to Nepal. And I did not know. We might have talked about this before, but if we did, I forgot, which is an amazing skill that I have, is to be able to just forget things that people have told me. So talk about, I mean, Nepal is not exactly a place that a lot of us go frequently.
No,
you know,
no.
It's not on the way to a lot of places. So no. What takes you, Chris, to the wonderful Himalayan country of Nepal?
Yeah. So some backstory on that. The beginning of this year, First City started a partnership with an organization called Church in Hard Places. And what Church in Hard Places does is provide resource and training for pastors who are in
hard places.
Yeah. So economically deprived or areas that are under-resourced as it pertains to Christian resources. And they really want to see churches planted in these areas or churches revitalized in these areas. So they provide a lot of training and resources. And one of the things they do is they have cohorts for pastors, and those cohorts are led by pastors on the ground in those areas, indigenous. And so Church in Hard Places operates in the United States and all over the world. And they are starting a brand new cohort in Kathmandu. And so when we entered the partnership with them in the beginning of this year, they asked, hey, where would you like your money to go? What cohort would you like to sponsor? We're starting this new one in Nepal. And there happens to be a fairly large Nepali population in Omaha.
Yeah, there is.
And so after thinking through that, praying through that, I mean, they're not necessarily in Bellevue, but just the connection there. And we thought that would be a really cool part of the world to be able to support gospel ministry. So we started, our money is going there to help support that. And as part of that, the offer is, hey, if you want to come over and help with the cohort and do some training, you're welcome to do that. So I thought, hey, there's not going to be a lot of opportunities in my life to go to Nepal in the future, perhaps. So why not see this and see what happens? And so myself and Eric Adele, our director of liturgy, who has done a lot of work with immigrant, refugee, family, students in his prior career, and just loves to travel worldwide and would be a great travel partner. So he's coming with me. We're going over. We'll be in the country. It'll take us 2 days to get there. We'll be in the country for 4 days, and then we'll come back.
You guys aren't like going to hike go on any secret hikes in the Himalayas and get eaten by anything, are
no,
you?
No, Eric's wife made me promise that we couldn't do any hiking.
Don't be getting lost up there in the Himalayas. Yeah, yeah. That's rugged ground.
Man, I've been doing a lot of reading and research on the country and have read a lot about those treks up to Everest. And that's no joke.
Yeah.
That is no joke. I learned today actually, I was just reading some stuff today that the oxygen at that level is 1/3 of what it is at sea level.
Wow.
So that sounds pretty intense just at that level right there.
Yeah. Talk about your travel schedule for getting there. Cause I was fascinated to hear like, yeah, how do you even get to Nepal?
Yeah. So we fly from Omaha. We leave Friday morning, 7 a.m. from Omaha. We fly to Seattle and we'll have like a 7-hour layover there. Then we fly from Seattle to Doha, Qatar. And that's about a 14-hour flight, I think is what it says. Then we have a 10-hour layover in Doha. And then we fly from Doha to Kathmandu, which is like a 4.5-hour flight.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot of travel.
It's a lot of travel. A lot of travel. And then coming back, I think we go from, we fly a little different direction. We go from Doha to Philadelphia. And then Philadelphia, our final destination is Denver, because after we get back that weekend, I'm doing a wedding in Denver. So.
Nice. Just going right to another thing.
Right to it, yeah.
Chris, what's your, on a 14-hour flight, what's your thing? Are you reading a book? Are you watching movies? Are you sleeping? What's your vibe for on a plane?
I have a plan. So the way I'm trying to think through it, Mindy, is like, you should just kind of block your schedule a little bit. And so we are going to be preaching through the book of Revelation in the fall. And I have some,
you're going to write all your sermons. On
yeah,
the
I'm write all my sermons. But I do have some reading that I want to do, just getting my head in the book of Revelation. Then yes, I'll spend some time watching some movies, and then probably bring like a more fun read, some fiction or something along to read. So I'm going to kind of just
Left Behind.
Go. Yeah. Left, exactly. In Get light of
Revelation,
I'm going to read some great commentary on the book Left Behind series.
Are you taking Greg Beale's commentary on Revelation?
I am.
I mean, that's the best commentary
yes,
I've read.
Yes, yes, yes.
So good. So good. Okay, so, hey, by the way, I wanted to tell you, we have church members from Nepal. They're Nepalese, and it's a couple. The husband passed away last year of cancer, and we hosted the funeral. Really sad. They're young. He was young. She is now a widow. But there were like 300 Nepalese people at this funeral, none of whom I had never met before. But it was amazing how large the Nepalese community is in Omaha and how connected they are despite varying backgrounds, varying religions. They sort of all show up for each other. It was really beautiful.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I am so excited to experience. I've never been outside of a Western context.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited to be able to, not just that, you know, Kathmandu, Nepal kind of has its own mystique to it, but just to be in an Eastern context, predominantly Hindu and Buddhist, religious society. So there's a lot about this that I'm looking forward to, and also just kind of want to enter into open-handed. Getting to do some training and teaching, I'm excited about that. But there's also this piece of, man, I've never had to like be in a context where there's going to be that much cultural translation going on. Not only just the language, but also how am I communicating things in a way that I'm not using allusions and analogies that are going to like completely be lost on someone. So I've had to really think through some things well, trying to pray through just the apprehension or the insecurity that I may feel, and just let the Lord work.
Yeah. Sounds really, really interesting. I'm excited to get your report when you come back. Yeah. I don't imagine you'll visit a whole lot of cathedrals.
No. Some Hindu temples, perhaps.
Yeah.
And some Buddhist stupas, some statues of Buddha. But yeah, I don't know if we'll run into any cathedrals.
But it is fascinating. One of the leaders we support works in Kathmandu as a church. So we pray for them every 3 or 4 months. And I get updates from his newsletters, and it just seems like a very distant place culturally. I mean, things are not very Western, and it's a very different way of living and sort of different patterns of life, different sort of cultural, practices. And so it'll be really fun to hear your experience.
Yeah.
I got a new book that went out yesterday.
I'm excited about this book.
Released.
When I walked in, I'm like, yes, about time.
Gospel Training for Deacons. My new deacon training. Actually, here's the truth. I've never written a book. The only thing I've written are like workbooks, manuals, field guides. People call them books, and I respect that. But it's not the kind of thing where you would sit down and read it through. It's actually meant to facilitate leadership training, spiritual formation, reflection. It's more like a guided Bible study or a small group study. Everything I've written, gospel-centered life, gospel-centered community, my elder training and deacon training stuff, it's all intended to be sort of used more than read. But I'm thankful to see this hit the world yesterday, the 27th of August, put out by New Growth Press. Do you like the cover? The cover's my favorite part.
I mean, it's very similar to your the gospel eldership.
It's meant to be complementary. The gospel eldership is red. Gospel training for deacons is blue. They both have like a geometric pattern on them, but kind of different.
Do you get input on the cover?
I do. I probably give more input than any author that they work with. And the reason I know that is because they're kind of overwhelmed by my level of input.
Surprise, surprise.
But thankfully, this one was very easy because they had started with the gospel elder. They wanted to make it sort of visually similar to gospel eldership. And gospel eldership is my favorite cover that we had done. And so I just said, yeah, let's just do something similar. And so literally the first proof they sent me of the cover, I said, that looks great. So we actually had a listener write in a few months ago and say, hey, I want to hear about Bob's process of writing. So I was like, well, this is a good chance to talk about that since this book has just come out. And funny story, when you release a book, it's a year process from when I submit the manuscript to when it comes out. So this is coming out yesterday, but I submitted the manuscript last summer, you know, so the publisher's had it for 12 months. And you go through all these rounds of, you know, editing, cover design, soliciting, you know, blurbs or recommendations, doing the marketing and publicity. There's a whole, you know, the publisher does all kinds of things. And they, you know, so they tell me, hey, we'll ship, you know, as soon as it comes out, we'll ship you a box. I get some 20 or 30 copies that are just like my author copies. And so I was like, cool, I'm excited this month that I get to get these books. Well, I got a snapshot from Isaiah Lewis like 3 weeks ago. He's like, hey, look what just showed up on my doorstep. And it was a box of my books. And I was like, how come you have them, but I don't have them? And he was like, Amazon, man, they just sent them to me. And I realized like, yeah, this is what Amazon does because they're such a big player in the market. Basically what they do is the publisher gives them, you know, here's the release date for the book. And as you can imagine, you know, you got to have books in the warehouse so that you can ship them out on the release date. So Amazon from the publisher has some number of books and they know what the release date is. And they basically just release them early.
Wow.
So that they can, because they want to build momentum for other people to buy them. And so they know if we send it to Isaiah 3 weeks early, then he's going to tell people and other people are going to pre-order and it's going to, you know, it's going to help us sell more.
Yeah.
So I was kind of mad because I was like, man, my friend in Chattanooga, Tennessee had my book in hand before I even did. I'm the author, but I haven't even seen it yet.
It's like someone else meeting your kid before you do.
Yeah. Is that kind of weird?
Yeah.
But now they have shipped me a box of them and we have a couple here in front of us. And this is, I hope. So I'll tell you how I think about my work as a writer. And then we can talk a little bit about the creative process. But most of what I want to do is just help Christians and churches be healthy. My vision has never been to write a bestseller or to, you know, be a really well-known author. My vision has just been to use whatever skills God's given me to try to serve the church by helping churches and leaders have resources that strengthen them. And so the gospel-centered life, the gospel-centered community, and those various translations of those books for teens and for, you know, they exist in Spanish and Chinese and Russian and et cetera. And then these two books for leaders, Gospel Eldership and Gospel Training for Deacons. All of those are sort of attempts to help churches be healthy and help Christians be healthy. And I had written Gospel Eldership years ago. It's the elder training we used at Coram Deo in the earliest days that I sort of had cobbled together over a number of years, just, you know, writing and rewriting and rewriting and trying to come up with some content that helped to shape the kinds of leaders that we wanted to lead the church. And so New Growth Press published that in 2016, and it was well received. And I think it met a need that a lot of leaders feel, which is, great, there are books on ecclesiology, there are books on what is an elder, how should a church be led, how do you structure a church. There were few resources that got to the heart level of what are your fears, what are your insecurities, what are your idolatries, how does the gospel speak to those things, what does it mean to be aware of your weaknesses and limitations, lean on Christ for strength, what does it mean to be a servant leader who's driven by the gospel. So a lot of the spiritual formation components were unique and I think well-received. And so New Growth Press asked me, well, they started asking me in probably 2019, hey, would you do one for deacons? And the difference between the eldership material and doing something for deacons is I'd been working on eldership stuff for 10 years. And so I had a bunch of stuff on my hard drive that just became gospel eldership. I didn't have anything written for deacons. And so I was like, that sounds like a lot of work.
Other than a great position paper.
Yeah, I have a great position paper on what is a deacon, but I didn't have any of the developmental content. And so I kept putting it off. Like, I don't know if I want to do that. And they kept asking and very kind. I mean, they're very generous as a publisher. They're very kind to me. And they finally, Barbara, my editor, said, hey, I think you need to write this book. Like, I think churches need this and you keep putting me off and I'm going to keep asking. So let's do this. And so finally she won and I said, okay, yeah, we need to do it. I committed to a writing. The hardest thing for me is I would like to do things when I want to do them. Yeah. I don't want to commit to deadlines and because then I have to, you know, reverse engineer my life and get things done on a schedule. And that is actually the only way anything really gets done. But also it's just not how I like to work. So I committed to a deadline and that actually helped me get the work done. And I was thankful for how it came together. And so I'm hopeful. I mean, we have piloted this material within Coram Deo and actually Providence Church in Austin. A lot of their stuff was foundational to shaping this material. So we have piloted it, but I look forward to getting it out there and sort of having for churches a training track for elders and a training track for deacons. And so that you can, if you're a pastor or a church leader or a church planter, you kind of have a turnkey, you know, this isn't everything you need, but this is a good foundational tool for raising up elders and deacons.
Yeah. Yeah. No, as when I walked in and I saw this, the book, I was like super excited because as we have, developed deacons, I feel like our material, the stuff we have is good, but it does feel kind of patchwork in some ways. I'm trying to, you know, pull from this reading over here, pull from this thing over here, and to have kind of good content all compiled and both getting at, hey, defining the role, but also at the heart level stuff. This is definitely a resource we will get lots of mileage out of.
How deep do you want to get into my process?
I first have a question. Will you ever write a book, like something that you have defined as a book, like people are going to read, not just, you know, develop leaders with? Are you going to write the next great pastoral book, theological commentary, political philosophy? I mean, something.
I hope the answer is yes, but to be honest with you, I've started 7 or 8 books and I'd never, you know, they germinate for a while and then I kind of lose interest. So I would hope to.
Yeah.
I would like to, but I'm also the kind of person where I feel like if I can't say something meaningful and unique, I don't want to write a book just to write a book.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pastors that like writing a book is like, that proves that I'm like relevant and I did something. And I'm just like, I'm not that guy. And there's lots of other people who have written things really well and they've said it well. Yeah. And so unless I feel like I can make a unique contribution or a helpful contribution in some specific way, I'm probably, you know, I'm not motivated to just write. So there are some people who just like, they're writers, man, and they just want to put out content.
Yeah.
And they're really good at just generating ideas and thought. But for me, there's something in the back of my head that always asks, am I the person who could say this better than anybody said it? Because if not, why would I write something, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the things that you have published, I think, capture your strengths as a writer, communicator. You're really good at condensing stuff down, very helpful, condensed, clear.
Putting the cookies material on the bottom shelf.
Yeah, so I think that's what the world is getting from you as far as your writing is like the strength of that. And I've always appreciated that. Cause it's a workbook, yes, but there's a lot of wisdom you share here too. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
But to answer your question, yes. Would love to hear your process.
That's what this person who wrote in was asking me, like, yeah, talk about what it's like to write a book. Like, of course, okay, cool. You wrote something, but what is it like? You're going to get deep into my psyche here. You and our listeners. I am weirdly neurotic when it comes to writing, because if you read books about writing or go to seminars about writing, you know, they just tell you, hey, like if you want to write, you set yourself a word count limit and you try to write 1,000 words a week or 1,000 words a day, whatever. You set a limit and you just crank out and you don't try to edit too much. And then you go through another round of taking all that stuff and trying to make it, you know, condense it down and do something with it. I can't write that way. Like, I can't just generate a bunch of thoughts on paper and then come back and edit them. What I end up doing is I write a paragraph and then I sit there and read it and I say, is that exactly how I want to say that? And if it's not, I just sit there and rewrite it and rewrite it and rewrite it till it gets the way that I want. And that's a very laborious and slow way to write.
You just described how I am too. So I can relate. I'm like, yeah, that's me. I can't do chaos with words.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just blah. It's got to be crafted as I'm doing. So I understand.
So I find myself even like outlining something of having the whole thing in my mind is challenging for me because I'm more like, I need to write the first chapter before I know what the second chapter is going to be. And so I kind of have a rough sense of like, all right, here's the shape it needs to take. But it was really funny. My editor, Barbara, is a wonderful human being and she's really great at working with authors. And so she was suggesting to me, hey, based on what you did with Gospel Eldership, you know, here's what I think we need to aim for is like kind of, you know, take this idea and this exercise in this chapter, let's kind of rework those and then, you know, write these chapters fresh and whatever. So we had decided Gospel Eldership is 10 weeks. We had decided I want this one to be a little shorter. So we were thinking 7 or 8 weeks. And, you know, there was like a first chapter and a last chapter that she felt like I kind of want to keep the substance of what those look like in Gospel Eldership. There's a chapter on servant leadership at the front and a chapter on sort of like the temptations of leadership at the end. And then between that, just build out your deacon stuff, you know, as though I had deacons. She was like, your deacon stuff. I was like, well, I don't have any deacon stuff. I've got a position paper and a bunch of thoughts in my head.
Yeah.
So I had to sort of think about what are these middle 5 or 6 chapters going to look like? And how do I want to helpfully help a person think about what a deacon in a church is and does? And so...
So you kind of started with a top and tail, so to speak. Yeah, beginning and end. So of all the things you could have said about a deacon, how did you start to refine what you specifically wanted to say?
Well, I knew what I wanted to be light on is let me work through all the biblical material on deacons. Cause you can find that a lot of places. There's a lot of books and commentaries that have good, you know, good teaching on like, here's what 1 Timothy says about a deacon or whatever. So I did one chapter on biblical qualifications. Then I did one chapter on how deacons and elders function together. Because I think that's, you know, what's interesting as you read the New Testament, Chris, and you know this because you're a preacher, is that you have this development of the church. It's like the thing's getting built as the mission goes forward, right? Mm-hmm. So when Jesus says, go make disciples, what you have is 120 apostles or 120 disciples in the upper room. You don't have a church in Ephesus yet and a church in Corinth yet and a church in Rome. So the New Testament, the way the church sort of takes shape, as you read the New Testament, you start with a very sort of, what would you call it? Like a rudimentary version of what the church looks like. And then the later documents in the New Testament, you have a little more refined, fuller vision of it. And so, you know, you have that passage in Acts 6 where the apostles, the church is growing in Jerusalem and the apostles say, hey, you know, these widows are being overlooked and it's not right for us to neglect the ministry of the word in order to serve tables. So find us 7 men full of the Holy Spirit and a good reputation, and let's put them in charge of this. And most people would say that is not the office of deacon, but there's a basic division of labor there of like, we need to preach the word and be devoted to prayer and the ministry of the word. And we need people to take care of these widows and do practical, help the church practically meet the needs of the people that it's serving. And so that distinction is sort of a foundational distinction between the work of an elder, which is more preaching, teaching, shepherding, and the work of a deacon, which is more serving. And so I started there with just what's the basic division of labor between elders and deacons? And then you have 1 Timothy 3, which shows us both offices, and then you have various other texts in the New Testament that sort of show us how they work out. But I wanted to write a chapter that's a little bit about like, what is a deacon and what is an elder and how they work together?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the first section. And then all I did is I thought about, okay, if you're trying to capture what a deacon does, what is that? And I use the categories of inward, outward, and upward. So there's an inward responsibility deacons have to care for the church. That's Acts 6, taking care of the widows. These are Christian widows who the church is responsible for. You have an outward responsibility toward the community. So if you look at the earliest churches and what deacons did in the second and third century, it was very much like helping to serve the needy in the community, mm-hmm. helping the church reach out to the poor and the disadvantaged in the community. So there's this outward facing work that deacons do. And most people who write about deacons, that's sort of the most obvious thing, is like deacons are people that help with mercy ministry and help the church do very practical ways of serving its environment. And then there's an upward responsibility that I think deacons have that just relates to helping shape the culture of a church. Mm-hmm. And help as leaders, they need to be people who are deep in the gospel and that help to put Christ at the center of the church and help people have a gospel culture. And so that's kind of how I did the inward, outward, upward. You know, I just did three chapters on what's the inward responsibility of deacon, what's the outward responsibility, what's the upward responsibility. And then what's weird about me, Chris, is then I want to do unique things in each of those. I don't want to just like recycle stuff. I want to do like, okay, can I make a unique contribution there? And so I'm always looking for, you know, what church history resources can I leverage that no one else has leveraged? Who can I quote that, you know, people wouldn't maybe think of? How can I bring some kind of insight or some kind of clarity here that might be uniquely helpful to people? And so I kind of want to, there's a lot of that stuff. There's a lot of, you know, 20 years of sermon writing and research and stuff that's kind of filtered in here, mm-hmm. especially how deacons worked in the earliest church. Mm-hmm. You know, some of my church history research.
So did you do new research for that stuff, or was that stuff you had done before and you just had to kind of go back in your files?
It'd be nice if it was as easy as going back in my files. I'll tell you. So again, we're deep in my psyche here, but the way this generally works is I will recall, oh, I remember reading a quote somewhere about that. And then I will type in the search bar on my computer, you know, whatever I can remember from the quote, mm-hmm. and then nothing will come up. Yeah. Then I have to go, darn it, where is that?
Yeah.
And eventually I find it. So for instance, there's a famous quote from a Roman emperor, Julian the Apostate, who was a very bad emperor and a very anti-Christian emperor in the third century. And he's rebuking one of the leaders of one of the Roman governors because the Christians are doing better mercy ministry. Mm-hmm. He's like, these impious Galileans are taking care of our poor and theirs. How come we can't, you know, why can't we do better, basically? And I wanted to find that quote because it testifies to the fact that the church was so known in the Roman Empire for their mercy ministry that even the Roman governors who were pagans were aware of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was one of those things of like, yeah, where is that quote? And then what happens is you start searching for it. And what I find is that a lot of people have quoted that quote, but nobody has sourced it properly.
Yes,
so it's
yes.
just like, you know, someone's quoting another modern author who used the quote, and then they're quoting another modern author who used the quote. And I'm like, where's the original quote though?
Yeah.
And so I'm the kind of person where I want the primary source.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't just want to say, you know, Tim Keller said this in his book and, you know, he was quoting someone else. So that's an example of like, I did a deep dive into like, where is that exact story?
Yeah.
And I found it in Rodney Stark's book, The Triumph of Christianity. And he is a very good, you know, Rodney Stark is a PhD or was a PhD scholar, and he has really good footnotes. So in his book, I was like, okay, here's the actual source. Mm-hmm. And the source, of course, is some, you know, third century historian
there you go.
That he had read. But, yeah. But man, I chased that quote down for probably, you know, there's like 5 hours of my work is just me doing Google searches for like, where else do I need to look to find this quote?
No, I appreciate that. Cause I know Justin Taylor has done this and others where they'll take like a quote like that and show, hey, no one can find the source. It's probably just made up.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't want to be using made up quotes and made up anecdotes in my book. So I can appreciate that.
Thank you. I'm particular about primary sources. So, but you know, there's some stuff like that. And then of course I'm trying to do a lot of spiritual formation work. So actually the hardest thing about writing is some of the exercises, some of the questions, asking good questions. Anybody who's ever written small group material for a church will tell you, writing a sermon is way easier than writing one good small group question.
It's true.
I can write 30 minutes of content that I'm going to say, but if I try to think about like, what's a good question for you to ask in your living room that will actually make people talk about something, that's super difficult.
Yeah, yes.
And so there's a lot of work on exercises and discussion questions and so forth in here. So yeah, that's a little, insight into my writing process. And thank you for asking whether I'm ever going to write another book or an actual book. I don't know. I think this is the last thing I'll do for a while. I'm working on a chapter for another book that comes out next year with the Keller Center on cultural apologetics. So I'm contributing to some other projects, but I think I'm just glad to get this over the finish line and hopefully breathe a little bit and maybe get recharged. And then maybe you'll come back from Nepal and be like, man, here's what the church around the world needs. And I'll, you know, get to work on something else. Yeah. But
is that chapter more like just kind of this, or is it more kind of like something to be read?
Totally unrelated.
Yeah.
The Gospel Coalition book, I think it's put out by Zondervan or supposed to come out next year. It's just a book on what is cultural apologetics. Okay. Because we realized, you know, I'm part of this Keller Center for Cultural Apologetics, and people are like, that sounds really cool. What is that?
What is that?
And we're like, yeah, no one knows what cultural apologetics means. Yeah. And so they're trying to write a book that sort of answers that question. And so they asked me to do the chapter on the church as an apologetic, which is something I care a lot about. It's just the church as a community that reflects the gospel. So that's what I'm in the middle of right now.
Are you going to use that quote from Julian the Apostate in that chapter?
No, that one's not. No, I'm building this chapter around Lessing Dubigen.
Okay.
And his quote in the Gospel in a Pluralist Society, where he talks about the church as a hermeneutic of the gospel.
Yeah.
Kind of a famous quote in church planting circles.
Yeah.
And, but I'm trying to build out, like, what is he getting at there? And how is the church, how does the church become a hermeneutic or a way of people understanding the reality of the gospel?
Yeah.
So anyway, if you're a listener, unless you're going to be trained to be a deacon, this probably isn't a book for you. But hopefully, if you're a listener and A, you are a deacon in your church, B, you want to be a deacon in the future, or C, you're in a church and you're like, hey, we need to train some deacons. Pastor, you should get the Bob's book. It's helpful for that. So those are the three categories that it might be helpful in. Otherwise, for most of our listeners, just thanks for letting me talk about my creative process. And thanks, Sarah, our listener, Sarah, for asking the question to ask me to talk a little bit about what it's like to write a book. So that's the journey. Chris, we're excited about your and Eric's trip to Nepal. And will you be back in like 2 weeks for a recording session?
Yeah. Okay. I'll be here the next time.
So you will hear. I was like, Chris might be gone like Dusty now for like, we'll hear from Chris 2 months from now.
No, I will. When we do the recording session, I'll have been back from my trip for like 2 days. So
beautiful. You'll still be a little jet
lagged. Probably a little jet lagged, but yeah, be ready to share some things.
Listeners, if you want to bring iced coffee for Chris for the next Wednesday conversation recording session.
Or cherry coke, because I'm not really a coffee.
Oh, you're right. Sorry. I should not have. Chris hates coffee, so never mind.
Never mind.
Don't bring in that. Well, we always say the goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in some other context, we always say, hey, thanks for listening in. Our prayer is that this conversation could help you as you minister in the context you're in. And of course, we'd love to hear from listeners, so feel free to email us with topics, thoughts, questions. podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday.